You know, there's that thing about engineers feeling like they are the people that, you know, they are the people that make the world go round. Even as an engineer, I didn't like my fellow engineers. You know, very arrogant and pompous. They feel like the most brilliant guys in the room. And most of the time, I'm like, my brother, it's only code you write, oh, come off it.
Hello, everyone. You're now listening to After Scrum with Ada
and Ami. Here we talk about what is new,
what's interesting,
and what you would have considered difficult to tech.
Lego.
Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Guys.
How are you doing?
Happy New Week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you guys missed us. Today is like very, very special.
Yeah.
We had, as you can see, we have a man.
I have a third person.
A man in tech. A tech man. He's not a bro. Because he has passed bro level.
God. You know? Actually, did you ask him? Did you have this conversation?
We know these things. Yeah, if you know, you know. Yeah. So we have, can you just like tell us your name, you know, and what you do?
Okay, I feel like I said this during the intro video. my name is Osita Dima and I'm a product manager. So yeah, that's basically what I do. I guess there will be time to explain what all that means.
Yes, we will. We would love to like really go into that. But before then, is there any interesting thing that's been happening in tech this week?
This week? What's happened? Well, I mean, besides the fact that a lot of people are out of jobs, I don't think there's anything in particular. I mean, the scene has been very, very quiet for a long time, right? And of course, people are not raising money as much anymore because there's no money to
raise. But you know, some people are still raising. I saw, like, I've been seeing some people have been raising.
But I think most of the people that are raising are like those who...
Clarify, and I've seen like,
and they're not just fresh out of like Y Combinator or something.
But
I just know that, you know, the number of people that are raising are, you know, fewer. I remember, you know, 2022, like every month you're hearing that these people raise their
3 million, 4 million, 5 million.
Because I was thinking that, like, by this time of the year, that like things would be already like looking as if it's stabilizing. Like, I was thinking September, October, like, you know, and we're almost in September. And
I guess towards hiring season, you know, because people start to hire in this environment.
Yeah, exactly.
And everywhere is still quiet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I think this particular year has been very, very peculiar, you know, on the tech scene, because I remember sometime last year in May, investors that, you know, for one of the companies I was working with at the time, was saying that everybody needs to tighten their belts, pause hiring, do this and that, even try to raise bridge rounds. I remember that startups that time, they were raising bridge rounds. So if, for instance, you had raised your seed, but you had not met, you know, your targets, the targets for you to raise your Series A, like, they'll tell you that you just need to raise like a bridge round that is going to, you know, get you past this particular economic downturn, because that's the reason why people are that's the reason why people are holding on. Investors are not like investing that much anymore, because the economic situation is totally crazy.
And it's like the world economy.
The world economy.
It's not just like the Nigerian thing at this point.
And you know that when I knew that, you know, things are going to go bad, was when like big tech, you know, really started, you know, laying
last year.
Yeah, that was when I knew that, you know, it's really, really, really tough times ahead.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're facing like problems in tech. We're also facing our problems in the country. So problem day every year.
Exactly. It's completely different.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy.
It's like from every single angle at this point.
Speaking of something interesting, please tell me someone else is looking forward to the fight. Elon versus Mark Zuckerberg. I'm looking forward to it, honestly. And Elon said it's going to be live streamed on X
and Meta. From the
Are they going to live stream it on? Because, you know, we're talking about this now, we're like, maybe they'll have like a live Twitter space.
No.
It's commentary.
I think Twitter once had a feature called Periscope or something. There was something that you could use to live stream. I don't know whether it's still there. I don't know whether it's still there, but I'm sure that like it's something that they can always pull up again. I think the name was Periscope. You could use it. I remember some of these things they were doing on CNN channels, you could watch it on Periscope.
Really? Wow. Actually, you know, one thing that when we talked about this before, we're saying that the only thing they could do is like utilize the whole Twitter space thing, and then they run commentary on
there.
And then maybe your Meta will actually like be where they can actually put the videos. Yeah.
No, but I think that Twitter has explored streaming before.
Okay.
And I'm sure that they didn't throw that code away. I'm sure so I think they can just mix it up.
Oh, that's nice. Who's your money on? Who's your money on?
Mark Zuckerberg. Thank you. To beat.
Mark Zuckerberg. Do you know?
He's going to beat the money out of Elon Musk. This one is not. This one is not a rocket science. In the real sense of the word, it's not rocket science.
To find out about this one.
There's no need for space travel.
I don't talk too much because I'm like, maybe he just, you know.
No. I am sure. I am very sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, yes. I'm not betting on anybody. I'm open to surprises. Like, I want to see something interesting. Yeah. They should just not put our hopes up and give us nonsense.
And they better fight.
I don't want it to be like one of those. You remember when we were younger, we used to watch wrestling matches.
Mm.
And, you know, it was. I want it to be better than wrestling matches.
You watch UFC. You watch UFC. It's like, you know that they are beat. These guys are beat.
Yeah, exactly. I want whoever wins. I don't want the best to just win. I want him to be
struggle to win.
Exactly. No. That's what I want as well. Yeah. And I want them to beat them up.
That's like something I'm looking forward to. Sha.
So what have you been up to this week?
Coding. You know, I told you I was working on a new project. It's been stressful because timelines very short.
Yeah,
so it's been very, very stressful. And you know, I normally go to the gym.
Yeah,
I used to give you my gym updates, my gym trainers stories.
Mm-hmm.
So my personal trainer is going to camp. Yeah. Somehow I'm missing him because he's wicked normally.
Yeah,
but now he's going to the gym. I'm just trying to. He's going to camp NYSC. I'm just like, I know that I'm going to miss him because one thing I really like about him. Despite the fact that he's wicked, he like takes his time to, like, he's there with you. I've noticed in the same gym some personal trainers, they'll just like tell you what to do and go and then come and check you if you're done, but he'll stay with you. He'll tell you what to do, and if it looks like you're doing it easy, he'll increase your weight wickedness. But then
but he just the right time to go to campo now that they're planning to recruit 50 million Does he not know that he could defend?
You know, I've been telling him that he should just pray.
You'll start from there. Because you're the one serving the mission.
And he's now fit.
You see, you have to go to the gym to practice.
I'm telling you.
They're putting in the world front. So you come back, Sha. That kind of person. My bed, so you tell him.
that's what I've been up to, Sha.
Yeah, so what have you been up to this week?
Okay, this week, I don't go to the gym. I've had like very horrible experiences. I remember one time, you know, when we were like, you know, a little much younger. There was my friends, you know, we were living in Tricycle with them. They bought gym equipment, you know, they bought some, you know, very pretty looking gym equipment, like proper ones, so put it in the house there. So me and my guys, Ronnie, all of us went to that place to be, all of us stayed, you know. Lifting weights and doing things. I noticed that every evening I'll come out there, I'll carry weights, do this one, do that one. Meanwhile, it was to be them that their muscles were coming out. How can I be putting in? It's like somebody that is reading. You are putting in all that effort, you are studying math, you are trying to get away in engineering or medicine. You are failing.
Yeah.
So I said that, you know, that this thing is not for me.
But you know that, like, sometimes genes actually like play a lot. It plays a lot of role in how, like, you know,
and I was really looking forward to the point where, you know, I'll be buff and, you know, if I come out.
But you know, it's not just about going to gym. Diet is very important. And me, I'm someone that struggles a lot with eating. Like, I may just eat like by 12 and then before I know it, it's already 6 p.m. And then I'll just eat twice. So I know it really affected me because I checked my weight on Tuesday. And let me tell you how stressful my week was. I checked my weight on Tuesday. It was like 71.4. I had already lost from when I started.
Yeah.
And then I checked it on Saturday when I went. I was 69.4. Wow. I've lost 2 kg.
Yeah. That's
without going to the gym.
Yeah.
between Tuesday to Saturday, I've lost 2 kg without going to the gym.
That's insane.
So I know that diet is very important. So I know that before I go back to the gym this week, I need to like eat. So I went shopping, make sure I have like the proper things to eat, you know. So I think that could be what affected.
Well, I think maybe no matter the amount of diet that he would have actually gone on, the amount of muscle definition he would probably get would not be as much
as those people that already bought. So I just said, this is not for me. So I decided that gym is not for me. But you know what? For what I've been up to, currently, I dipped my hand into some consulting.
Okay.
So I'm working with a company. I will not mention yet. I'm not name dropping anybody. So basically, I'm just I don't even know what to call it. Just think of it as like business consulting. So I'm basically trying to help them out with, figuring out operational processes, you know, putting things into the place, performance, competence, things like that. So just, you know, a way to streamline their operations and, you know, sort of like make it more efficient, you know, so that, you know, you the amount of effort you put in is like commensurate to the results.
So yeah, I think a lot of people don't know that it's not just about the code. I mean, writing code is good. Writing good tested functional code is awesome, but it's not the code that is going to bring your money.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's definitely not.
A lot of people don't know that. They think once you just have like your shiny software.
There are a lot of things that go on under the hood. And when I mean under the hood, I'm not talking APIs. I'm talking actual under the, like in the back office. In the back office, there's something that is going on there that's making stuff, you know, happen. So I read about one young millionaire like that. What he was doing initially was you'd go and hire people in Nigeria here and pay them $1 an hour.
I saw that news.
Yeah, $1 per hour.
That guy is a millionaire.
To be training like AI models and stuff. And most of those people come around and tell you, man, at the back, and you know, that this an AI enabled this and that. You know, that's the kind of thing they'll tell you when they're writing about it.
Yeah,
you not know that there's one Ikechukwu
somewhere
in
India.
That is underpaid and training the stuff.
Well, I mean, you won't call him underpaid in the Nigerian context. If you're earning $1 an hour,
that's a lot of money.
A lot of people would live under a dollar a day.
Wow.
No, he was not paying them. He was paying them $1 an hour.
Really?
He was paying them $1 an hour. Yeah, I think it was $1 an hour.
Because I know I did the math. Because when I see figures, it's quick to calculate. I don't think.
So I mean, that's basically what I've been up to. So.
Okay,
yeah.
That's nice.
Thank you.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think this is actually like leading us into.
And then you, what were you up to?
Yeah, I just manoeuvred the question. Because I know I was up to anything interesting. And that was why I was trying to like save myself.
Sorry.
I was not really up to anything interesting. This week, I've just been like, just working and trying to meet deadlines that have refused to be met.
I don't think deadlines are meant to be met.
You know, I usually you're
meant to be
out.
Extended.
What,
you know?
Honestly, I don't.
Work
well,
is meant to fill out the time that you allot to it, right? That's usually what I say. But the truth is that this one, I've been trying so hard to fit it into the time that has been allotted to it, that has refused to fit itself into it.
Because you're like, okay, into books.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is done. And then I check again. I'm like, why? How did I miss this? Okay, this doesn't make sense. And I do a test, and then the sheet's still open. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just where I've been. Just tiring. But then something interesting. So I bought this Akota series, like the complete Akota series. It's this series of book that is written by Sarah Maas, and it's like New York bestselling list, and it's like something that so they're about to make it into a movie, and everybody's excited about it on TikTok, and I was like,
and then you went to buy the book so you'd be a spoiler.
So that when it's out and I'm watching the movie, I can just sit down there all judgy. I'm like, oh, I already know what's
going on. Like those people that came out to tell us that Jon Snow died.
Do you understand how amazing it is to know what will happen?
To use all that power.
Yes, I do have the power to say, and that's, you know, in my house, I'm such a menace because once I start watching a new movie, I probably already like read this stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm just going to move around and be like, you want me to tell you what's going on? And then my brother's like, no, don't.
And now
my
bed me.
But it's the
power. No, see, small power. You're
the weird thing is that I really don't care about spoilers.
Really?
I'll still watch it.
I really don't care about spoilers. You know when someone says, because, I mean, for instance, in Harry Potter, I knew Dumbledore died before I watched it. Because I had already read it.
Because you still want to see how, okay, how did he die?
I wanted to see how, you know, the thing about reading books is that it lets you do a lot of things with your imagination. Yeah. I'm telling you that the Hogwarts I had in my mind,
it was different from what
before I watched the movie. To me, that's the real Hogwarts. Because you see the things I was imagining. You get, like, you imagine it in a totally different way.
Yeah.
So, I think that when you now see the movie, the experience is new because, of course, there are now visual elements to it. You get what I'm saying? So, I don't really care for spoilers like that. You know, there are people that say, no, don't tell me what happened.
There's some people that get angry, like seriously angry.
Yeah, I know people like that.
If you actually like, decide to give them spoilers, yeah. Right? My sister, they don't take it that seriously, but I still respect their opinion. I'm just going to, like, you know, annoy them a little bit more.
Because why you know things happening?
But the bad part about like reading a book for the movie contrast is that no matter what, the character is just not going to measure up because you built them up in your head. And then when it's not time for you to actually like, see the character, the people that they cast, just like one of my very favorite books, Outlander, right? The very first time I saw the casting, I was like, hell no, these are not the people that I've seen.
You have your mind.
Exactly. But then when I actually gave the movie a chance, right? And I watched it and I was like, okay. They did a good job. I cannot believe that I'm agreeing that they did a good job with the casting and actually with the acting as well. But like, you know, you just get that invested. I'm sorry, I'm just getting excited and all over the place. Yeah. So okay, yeah, that's something nice that happened. Oh, thank you, Madison.
Yeah. So we're back to you.
Yeah, back
today's all about you.
Exactly. Is it?
Yes.
Well, today is Sunday, it's all about the Lord.
Alright, so, I've known you for
a while.
Yes.
How come you know it through this?
I see you don't go out.
What? No, wait, this is not the reason that you've not introduced us. Is that the reason? I see you once in a while. I think when we came for what do you call it? When I went to Genesis, that was the first time I met you.
Okay.
And one time he posted something on Twitter and it was funny, and then I responded, and then I saw him at Uche's wedding. Okay. So you see, so we've just had minor running ins, but you've never told me that you know Osita. You're such a horrible friend, that's what I have to say.
Well, I told you like when I was invited.
Where is he?
That should count. You know, I think I've known him since like when, okay, I think before you joined, he used to come to the office.
Oh.
I think he's the one that brought Emeka to the office.
Really?
Then, yes.
Ah.
So he's like an OG.
Are you serious?
As he has been writing code before we even thought about it, you know?
Yeah.
And he has like done a lot of things. Like, a lot of things.
No, actually, when
his career is like where people like, think like, you know, want to be.
Yeah, I'm actually excited about actually get into
the role.
Yeah.
Can you tell us your journey into tech? Like,
yes,
what did you study in school? Like, did you know that you were always going to do tech, or you just saw some guys doing it and it looked interesting?
Yeah,
you know, the funny thing is that I had how do I put this? I had an interest in computers right from when I was a kid, so. I remember when we bought our first computer, I think that was sometime in 2002 or so, 2003, yeah. You know, there was this thing they were doing in Computerize Nigeria, so a friend of my dad's was, you know, one of the people running the project, so it was basically them supplying computers at like cheap rates for people. So my dad, you know, went, bought one. It was a Pentium 3. Pentium 3 computer, big white, you know, monitor, system units, and keyboard.
Yeah.
No, that then we call it
system units. The thing I know about Pentium 3 is that's what they this is insult some people with that. They'll be like, your brain is functioning.
Yeah, and the weird thing is that at the time, it was the only computer that I had come in contact with that was faster was the Pentium 4, and the Pentium 4, I think it had just come out, or maybe it had been out, but it wasn't very, very popular around here.
Mm.
So I remember then I used to play Grand Theft Auto.
You know, Vice City.
horrible experience. There was this my friend, I think he had a pension for, so you know, on his own, it was fast, it couldn't be stitching and all of that. But, you know, on our own, it was a little bit slow. It gets, you know, very stitchy, and sometimes it will just hang. Sometimes you'll be going on a mission and you see your guy, he'll start, you know, he'll start jerking and stuff. So, you know, we got that computer then, and we used to play Vice City on it. And, you know, after a point, I was like, man, I'd like to create something like this, you know.
Nice.
I don't worry, I never went into game programming eventually, but game development, but yeah, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I started, you know, bugging my dad that, man, I would really like to learn how to you know, do stuff like this, write programs. I didn't even know it was writing programs.
Yeah.
That was what it was called. So then I eventually, you know, started doing some kinds of things on the computer itself, you know, some like administrative tasks, being able to write small batch scripts like that, that you just, yeah.
How old were you?
I think I was 13 or so.
Wow. You're one of them.
No, I wasn't one of them. Honestly, I was just messing around. I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I was just, it was very interesting. It was fascinating, you know, to me and stuff like that.
Mm.
So sometimes I'll open command prompt and type H so that I think it's H. Yeah, you see all the commands.
Yeah, definitely one of them. Let's just take it, because I didn't even know anything about all these command prompts I knew about programs, you know. I think CorelDRAW was my favorite program. Mm-hmm. I used to mess around with it a lot growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But these things you're saying, you're one of them.
No, I'm not. My parents, everybody, you know, knew that thought that I was going to go to school and study computer science and stuff like that. So fast forward to, I think that was in 2006 or 2007, when we were writing Wayne Jambo State. I also saw my friends, mechanical engineering, so put petroleum engineering. Let's go to school, come back, we'll go and work in Shell.
That was a thing.
It was a big deal.
That was
the life everybody was aspiring to be an oil worker.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's the legit thing that you could do at the time. That's because I consider politics illegitimate. But that's by the
that's
way.
Right,
so
right,
but the general idea was that if you wanted to have money, you know, the kind of money that you wake up one day, you'll be driving a Prado, you have a driver, you're living in Lekki. Then it wasn't even Lekki, it was VI and Ikoyi.
Later we'll talk about like how interesting that switch, how fast that switch happened, right? I don't even realize, right?
Or in Port Harcourt, you're living in Transamadi, you know, that kind of thing. So
even worried then.
Yeah, or you wanted to live in Warri and stuff like that. So I was like, man, I can't live. It don't now be that my mates are now planning their future. Me and me looking inside computer. Yeah, it was peer pressure. So I put petroleum engineering. I put petroleum engineering, you know, for my job. My parents drove down to my school. He said that they know me very well. This is not consistent with the things that I've been saying. Because every time people ask me what I want to be, I say I want to be a computer engineer, this one, you know. And he used to fascinate everybody then, like somebody, because he wasn't the normal doctor. Lawyer, engineer, professional, you know, those kind of things. So I don't know, I found a way to convince my parents, because my parents, they are not the kind of people that will tell you
what to do,
you know. So I put it there, and you know, as things would happen, I didn't even get petroleum engineering. So they gave me polymer and textile engineering in Futo. So you know how it was then. Now they tell you just can't study it. You know that engineering is engineering. When you come out, I said that this thing is not going to work. That was the first time that I got into a place, and I was what do they call them? The minority.
Yes.
You only see that you walk into a place and you are the oppressed people. You are the bad people that they are telling you, look at these guys, you know. They people way too savage.
Yeah.
And you know, coming from a place like I used to be one of like in my class, you know, one of the most brilliant people. You know, so I now got into university. You go see you know, now it's in your department that they have the people with low self-esteem. No, I'm sure that it must have changed by now. Yeah. And this is not a reflection on all the people studying Polymer Textile University in Futo. But and I hated my petroleum engineering and chemical engineering counterparts. I did not like them at all. You know, they come into class. I think it was lecture hall too then. Mm-hmm. You come into class, you know, everybody's listening. You carry your own school bag as a polymer guy.
And sometimes
they'll
be like,
they're
talking about
me. Sometimes you want to say something, you see, leave this polymer. Yeah, that kind of thing. Because,
you know,
that's not
what they're talking about.
So, and I can't even remember what our chant was then. But I can't, you said petroleum, something petroleum, you said oil and gas.
Mm-mm.
I think, I can't even remember the one for chemical energy. But you know that.
That one would be Ankara.
It was not my car. So, but you know,
oh, God.
Something weird happened. I don't really like to talk about it, but I had to leave Futo.
Mm-hmm.
Very close to my final year, you know, in about 400 level. I had to leave Futo. I came back to the house, stayed for a year, and then I would jump again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and went to study computer science in UNISIC.
Wow!
Yeah, and I like.
I went to UNISIC.
Oh yeah, great people go to UNISIC. Most of our best engineers around here went to UNISIC.
Thank you,
but you went there.
No,
let's not do that here.
I want us to do that here. Most of our best engineers went to UNISIC.
I can't talk a lot about
for real. Around here, and I know
founders in this
sector. Engineers.
Calm down.
Founders, I don't know engineers. Are we not all the same engineering crew? Please, but let's not do this.
Let's leave that too. At least I know that one of you is the best engineer. Mm-hmm.
Let's leave them to
God he wants. Well, I mean, there's no need for this argument. Yeah. It's usually based on who you be. But yeah, so, you know, I went into UNISIC. But before I went to UNISIC, you know, while I was at home, I was like, man, what am I going to be doing with, you know, this whole 1 year and stuff? And then I talked to my dad. I told him that, you know, I wanted to go to learn how to write, you know, code. I wanted to learn how to build websites, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we worked it out. I went to one institute like that, learned how to build websites. The things I learned then, I started out by learning Oracle. 11G was a big deal then. That time, they also tell you if you learn Oracle, you go and work in an enterprise company, you do this and that. All those things, none of them eventually happened. But one thing I really liked about the time, especially starting out with Oracle, was that it formed the foundations for everything that I did as a software developer. Because you imagine learning how to write programs, well, the first thing you learned was SQL. So I knew a lot about data and databases even before I started coding. Do you understand? Okay. So by the time I started writing programs, I learned how to write PHP. That was the first language. I think almost everybody learned how to write.
Do you know my problem with PHP?
A lot of people are using
them. Dollar signs. I see. This thing used to confuse me, and the fact that.
But there are dollar signs in JavaScript.
No, it's jQuery. The fact that there's dollar sign and it's not money. It was a problem for me. I'm not going to listen.
And then the accessor is this arrow thing.
You know.
So normally you type it, you press a dot, and you access this thing. But
you have to.
But I mean, so I learned about a lot about databases. So what it helped me do was that because I learned relational databases, how to model data, create relational tables, build relationship between those tables. What it did is that when I started, eventually building software, it made it very easy for me to,
understand.
To visualize data, to structure your database well, so things like that.
That's nice.
So by the time I went to study computer science, I'd already started writing.
You're now the reigning people in your class.
I wasn't even necessarily one of these. I have a very loud voice, so people used to listen to me in my class.
Studying computer, when you went to study computer engineering, was it thought about, like, you know,
was it what you expected?
Yeah, was it what you expected?
No, I've been to Nigerian University once, so I wasn't expecting anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I was doing at the time was I used to build websites for people at that time. So I'll build website, do this one, they'll pay me money. I'll use it to, you know, do big boy in school. It's not even like proper big boy. It's just you go to Fendi's, drink cocktails. Sometimes
that's not what big boy is in school.
No, I think that was what big boy was. Until some people started doing some things.
But then if you're you know, you want to take a lady out and you take her to Fendi's, buy cocktails, buy what they call it, suya at Fendi's, and you know, you're doing all right. At least you're not going to somewhere, and if they, you're going out to them site, so I was getting some money there that I used to, you know, from, I was not cooking as a student because you know, money was
this is all the big boy now. What else?
That was the kind of big boy we used to do then. Yeah. You not go to the club and be doing like this. Nobody used to do that then. The people that used to go to club then, that used to take, it was like our senior men, they will come in from out of town and then they'll call you that, how far, where are you? And when you go there, they'll know that you are the junior person there. So that's what it was like. So during my time in university, I'm not going to lie, for the most of it, I was coasting through. It was difficult for me to attend lectures in 100 level because the lecture halls were usually too packed. Yeah. And like I said, you know, growing up, there's how my life was. I'd never been in a classroom of more than 40 people until I got to university.
Yeah, okay.
So I couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
You're not understanding the lecturer. You're not.
You're very early, and even when you're there early, the class is already packed.
So
yeah.
I
MBH hall. Yeah.
No, we're going to there's that lab. That last lab in Science Village. I think it was biology lab, and physics lab, and chemistry lab.
Okay, that means that was when MPH, you are still making building.
No, MPH was MPH ready, but we used to have just like two lectures or so. And those MPH lectures were the worst.
Oh, God.
They were the worst. Like, you don't want to come to that place. Yeah. It's hot.
Yes.
It's noisy. You can't hear anything. Yeah. Do you get? So, you know, I found it difficult to go to lectures then. And as somebody that most of the time, how I learn is by listening to people.
Okay.
Most of the time, when I had to cultivate my reading habits, most, you know, from when I was young, it was literature. So I used to read a lot of novels and stuff like that. But reading textbooks and those things and all that stuff, it wasn't something that it was not my style of learning. Do you get? But I had to learn how to do that because if you don't do that, you fail. Yeah. So I didn't do very well in first year, and even in second year level, did. Maths courses wanted to kill me in second year.
Yeah.
I think it was from the second semester of the second year in 300 level when our class became smaller. So it now made a lot of sense. And they were now talking about things that were not really abstract to me. These were things that I had understood already. It was a lot of fun going to school. The school part was so fun. It was the other things that were added to it. So I did like some community work. I did like some tech community work in school. I remember when I think it was Laravel. Was it Laravel, Nigeria? We had one Laravel meetup. Yeah, it was Laravel meetup, not Laravel Nigeria. It was Laravel meetup Oka that we did. That was the first time that I spoke at an event.
Wow. Do you think people were responsive to tech as at then?
Yeah.
Compared to now,
you know. So the thing is that I felt like then it was a bunch of really curious people that really had not figured anything out. That were just curious and, you know, energetic people who just wanted to show that they could do something at least, because it wasn't very popular. And this thing I'm telling you was this was like 2015, 2016. So then the space around here in the south, it was like there was nothing happening.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so I was even shocked by the turnout, you know, at I was shocked by the turnout at
and people that were doing it then, they were not necessarily doing it because it was the Coots and just like
you said. It wasn't, it was Neds that were doing it then. There's this guy, Frank. Frank was one of the people. Frank, this Dube Muriaga, I don't know if you ever met him. He was there at the time, and Kelechi Benny, Frank's, I think he used to be Frank's best friend, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were, but I met Frank in music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did our first event there, and it was a success. You know, we just called one guy from, I can't remember his name again, but he was like one of the people used to look up to there, and he was an engineer with one company. He was one of those people that started doing remote work early. He seemed like a middle-aged kind of person. Mm-hmm. Or maybe that's just his look, but...
Is it Mark Essien?
Mark Essien. I can't remember his name anymore. Mm. It's not Mark. So, I mean, you know, we started out with that. I tried to do some things. I can remember teaching at Gavi Tech. There was this thing in school. One of the lecturers then had this institute. Did you know Gavi Tech?
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the... So we used to go to the... digital library, computer lab, I can't remember which of them. So I went to teach there part-time. I was teaching people how to write
C# and stuff.
So that was basically, but I mean, that was how, you know, my own journey into tech started. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I've always known, but I think that the signs were there from when I was a kid.
Are you curious enough?
Yeah, and then even when I deviated and went astray, bringing me back to
that's quite the story.
And it's interesting that, like, you know, over time, I mean, you introduce yourself as a product manager, not even as a software developer. So it's interesting to see that you actually came from a background where you actually started coding, you were building websites for people, and then you evolved from there down to, when did you decide, okay, you know what, I've had enough of this
coding,
all this people's PHP nonsense.
So, okay, so the thing was, in 2016, I went to do my IT at Tennessee.
Okay.
Tennessee were the major player.
Big guys.
They're big guys. I think they still are the big guys.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to tech in the Southeast there. So I went there for my IT. So that was the first time I was, you know, introduced to, you know, things around working on a team. I even saw that there were like many other different ways you could, you know, build software and stuff like that. But then I was using MySQL, and that MySQL said, it's just put your database together, structure it. I didn't know that there were like deeper things that you could do and stuff like that. So when I got there during my IT, I learned how to write C#. And then I met some really like amazing engineers then too. So they taught me a lot of stuff about actual software engineering, you know, not just being able to write code and you know, stuff like that. So the first time I actually, because then OOP in my mind was just object-oriented programming. I could explain it, abstraction, inheritance, polymorphism, this and that.
Yeah.
But when it comes to that, to actually OOP, you know, the OOP, your OOP will not be OOP. So I met like really amazing engineers then. And at the end of the program, I was intern of the year.
Nice.
Yeah, I was intern of the year. So came with automatic employment and stuff like that. So by the time I was leaving school in final year,
I already had a job.
So I literally finished my exams on Thursday and I resumed work on Monday.
Wow. Was, that's
because what I did is
crazy. So that's exactly how it was. So by the time I came back as an engineer, you know, I started working on the team at Tennessee as an engineer. I don't even want to say engineer, but as a junior engineer or a developer, whatever you'd like to call it. But then we're having, like, in Tennessee, there was this like talent acquisition and retention problem that they were having at the time. So I was just, you know, the one evening like that, so my boss walks up to me and Amo says that that we're having this, that see the problems that we're having, that he thinks that he wants me to you know, figure out a way to solve, you know, this problem. We already had like an internship program,
mm-hmm.
but that they needed to build it in a way that, you know, by the time people are done with it, you know, they have enough skill to become entry level engineers and things like okay. that, you know, and you also to find a way to scale it. And thus started my journey away from engineering.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started, I wrote code professionally for about 7 to 8 months,
mm-hmm.
like as a professional member, like a member of the software team. So
yeah.
I pulled out and I became program manager for what would later become one of the most important things I've done in my life. It's called Learnable.
Yeah.
So you know, sometimes I walk into GDG conferences, you know,
yeah.
some places like that, and I see that, you know, almost all the people that are doing like some of these things are people that pass through that program.
That must feel very
It usually feels very good. I know people are always, you know, you walk and they say that's Ayamatanga and things like that. So that was how I started moving away from code. But while I was a program manager for the Learnable program, I was still doing a lot of coding because it's not like now where there's a team built around this team. That time was me running almost everything.
Yeah.
So I want to build an application form. I can build it myself.
Okay.
I remember when we had to, the first time we had to, we wanted to change the application process, you know,
mm-hmm.
so that we can focus on behavioral and personal skills and things like that. I had to build like a whole system that, you know, would collect, you know, people's forms. I even designed that form, the information to collect, things like that. I had to read a lot about hiring processes, things to look out for. So I think why I say that was one of the most important things that I've done in my life was that it helped me acquire a lot of skill across the board, like so project management skills, research. I even designed the curriculum by myself. Yeah.
That's the thing about working in a startup.
You're doing everything. So time to write up to build application from this. I can build application. When it was time to build the vetting, the system for vetting, I had to build a system that helped like most of the people that participated in the recruitment process to, you know, vet people easily and, you know, move them to the next level and, you know, be able to pull that up, say, okay, this person has passed the first stage of the interview, we move to the next phase, scoring and things like that, and even being able to collate like the final admission list and stuff like that. I was doing like a lot of coding then as well. And then of course when the program started, the first time I ran the program, that was the 2018 cohort, Learnable 18, because there was a 16, a 17 and then an 18. So I started running the program in 18, but we made a lot of structural changes in 2018. For the first time, it wasn't focused on software, it was now focused on like the whole product development process. So there was product design, front-end engineering, back-end engineering. We even had something called LBS, Learnable Business Sessions, where learn about, you know, business concepts, they learn about product management, they learn about project management. So it was just like this, you know, really, you know, full package. So I spent a lot of time working on Learnable and a lot of my youthful energy went into that. Yeah, because I remember times when, you know, everybody used to complain, you don't have a life outside work. You live for the office. It's not like now that you wake up and your office is your office is your table. So you wake up from your bed and you walk down to your office. So then you had to, you know, go all the way to the office. So I used to leave the house then 6:50, because my day usually starts by 5:30 a.m. Wake up, read my 3 articles on Medium, 6 a.m. I'll go and run for 30 minutes, shower, prepare, and at 6:50 I'm, you know, driving off, because I was staying in Transitoria, and if you don't leave by 6:50, that traffic on the bridge will just, you know, catch you. And then coming to work early was a must. I wasn't an orga then or anything like that. So you know, I did all of that. Like I said, it took like a lot of money to manage. People were complaining a lot, you know. I'll come back in the night, just greet my parents, straight to my room, my phone till I sleep off, you know, things like that. So it really took like a lot of my time and energy. But I did that for 3 years. amongst other things. So I was also, you know, playing like a really active role in the tech community in Enugu. I wouldn't say that I was a major player, but I was really an influencer. I remember the first time that I went to, I think it was a GDG Cloud something that happened at Digital Dreams. It was way back. And, you know, that was the first time I met T-Boy, you know, T-Boy of GDG. And, you know, I talked to T-Boy that day. I told him that, you know, I'm not one for showing up at meetups only on Saturdays. I feel like meetups are networking events primarily. Yeah. I'm one of those people that don't believe that much in terms of actual learning can happen at meetups. Do you get? So I told him that if we keep doing this thing like this, it's going to be all photo ops. You know, people come, they feel good about themselves.
Yeah, they give, home,
they get swags, and they go home,
t-shirts.
And nothing is going to happen. Yeah. So I told him that, you know, we need to start doing things that are actually going to have impact.
Yeah.
So collaborating with people like T-Boy, shout out to T-Boy. There's this, my chief. Let me remember his name at Digital Dreams. What's his name? Edoga, exactly. Mr. Edoga, yeah. So shout out to him as well. He was one of the people that, you know, were really all about making that kind of impact. And then of course I had the backing of my senior men at Tennessee and Genesis at the time. So we started doing things. I remember when we did the first Pink Summer of Code for ladies. I think it does now. It now has a new name. I saw the new name.
Or something
like that. But I was on the team that, in fact, I actually built the first Pink Summer of Code. I remember, I remember them, you know, calling my friends Gloria. She was an engineer at Tennessee then. I think she works at Microsoft now as an engineer. There was Grace SCN. She's a software engineer at Microsoft as well.
Nice.
Yeah, so, and Susan, I think Susan is at Amazon somewhere in Canada now. So, well, Susan was an engineer at Tennessee also at the time. So, we built like this program for women to, you know, basically, it was like a 2-week program or so. And we focused just on entry level stuff, just as a way to pique their interest. And I've gone to see like a lot of them move to, you know, build actual careers in software engineering and things like that. So, that was a plus. Also, on the community front, I remember when we did Genesis Ignite, you know, at Genesis, you know. So, basically, what we wanted to do was wanted to build, like, some sort of, like, I think there's this thing, TechCrunch Disrupt. That was what we had in mind.
Yeah.
But the general idea of it was just to inspire people, you know, to create an environment where people are wild, they see that there are certain things that can be done, you know, stuff like that. Tennessee would be where the people that powered that stuff. We did these school drives where we went around. We called it Hacktober because it was in October. We called it Hacktober. Hacktober.
Is you guys that were doing all these events that APC gave thousands of dollars?
Yeah. It was us there. So it was basically just to inspire people. So we went to. So it was now very interesting that when we now went back into schools, a lot more people were now really into the whole tech.
So like, how did that change? How did you like?
I
knew that when I was in school, it wasn't a thing, and it wasn't even cool.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't cool.
It wasn't cool then,
because, well, let me not say this, but it was not a cool thing.
It wasn't cool, but it suddenly became cool. Yeah.
And so I was very, 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 you know, surprised. You know, we got back to school, a lot more people. I went to UNM. I saw that they had raw hub. You just see like young boys every day, their glasses, coding with their bad laptops. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry has a MacBook.
Then
you see people with like, some of them, they are using masking tapes to hold the hinges. People fall apart, you know. You try to build or run your code. You wait, maybe you go and buy lunch
and come back and sit down.
Yeah. So but a lot more people were interested. The turnout for October was amazing. You know, we went to UNIZIC, went to like major universities in the Southeast, went to UNIZIC, went to Umudike, went to UNN, went to ANSU, that's COOU as it's called now. I think there was a fifth school, ESUIT. Went to ESUIT. So we went to like 5 or 6 schools. It was like a competition. I think first level one 100,000 at the initial stages. So 100,000 for the winners at the school level. Yeah. Then I think it was 200, 150, 100 for. Like we give out like about $1 million to students just like you know to encourage them and make them feel like this thing that you're doing it's, like that there's something in it, you understand, there's a potential for you to you know make a living out of it, and then you know doing like more and more editions of the Learning Book program so that there was generally more interest, but I think also the whole industry in Nigeria was evolving.
Yeah,
people were already hearing of the things.
2016.
Yeah, people were hearing of all the things happening at CCA Club, Andela.
Andela, yeah. Really
so Andela was I remember that there was a time I applied to be a campus ambassador for Andela. I didn't get in.
Yeah.
They didn't they ghosted me. So. But
they didn't know the things you were doing.
No, maybe there were just other people that were better than I was. But you know, so I you know, doing all of that, I saw that, you know, the quality of people were getting, it was improving, more people were interested in, you know, building careers in tech and stuff like that. And then it wasn't even as, it's not like now where people are, you're hearing $1,000 a month. And then it was just, let's do this thing. Like, it's cool. It's now cool to do it. You know, let's be bad guys. Let's talk about these things. Let's do it and stuff like that. So, yeah. So, I mean, it was fun. It was really fun all the way. But I think, that the main this thing of that switch happened in like 2018, 2019, when we started seeing the Unicode developers, Code Beast, iTrio, those guys that went into like massive tech influencing.
Yeah.
So these were the guys that now made with For Loop and things like that.
Yeah.
So
that
was the point that I knew that, you know, this thing is going to become massive. It's going to become massive.
Yeah.
So then of course our first engineers started getting remote roles, things like that. And then, you know, it was just history from there. So I think for me that's how like the industry has progressed. And I don't think that there was any actual catalyst, you know, that did it on. It was a lot of different things
happening at the same time.
Yeah. So and people were just keen into, you know, like many different things. So
that was like you decided, okay, you know what, I want to become a product manager. It wasn't something that you actively talk about.
No, I didn't actively think about. And even at this point where, you know, I was doing the learning program, it was just mostly being a program manager for something.
Mm-hmm.
I went into product out of a need for it.
Okay.
So we wanted to build a software development agency in Genesis at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So being the guy that has proven that he can do things that are new, that he can figure out how to do new things. So I had to go and learn all the things that I had to do with
product
development in general.
I want to ask you, I said this thing and you were like, what's the difference between product management and project management?
So think of it this way. As a project manager, you are responsible for delivery. So you guys know what you want to do. Now you're now responsible for ensuring that thing is delivered.
Right.
Okay.
But as a product manager, you are the person that is figuring out what you people want to do, the strategy you're going to use to sell it, how you're going to measure success to say that this thing has been done, or this thing that we've built, or this project that we've embarked upon is succeeding or has succeeded. So think of...
So the project manager tells the product manager...
Don't think of it in those terms, because most of the time, as a product manager, you also serve as a project manager when it comes to, you know, actual delivery of the software, you know, in software engineering. But think of it this way. A product manager owns strategy and success. A project manager is primarily focused on delivering within budget and time frame.
Okay.
So think of
it. It feels like the product manager has more work to do.
The product manager.
Yes.
I don't know about more work, but I know that.
Everyone doing the strategy, doing the every kini.
But great. I was thinking that, okay, so that means that the product manager works somehow as a business strategist in this case, and also works closely with, like, you know, because
the development team.
Yeah, the development team, and then also, like, the sales people.
Now so the thing is that, you know, the way, you know, companies and products are being built today, you know, most of these companies are now product-led.
Yeah.
So the product is at the heart of everything.
Okay.
So business interactive product, customer service,
product,
interacts with product, engineering interacts with products, everybody interacts directly with product.
Okay.
So think of the product manager as like the conductor in an orchestra. So you're trying to coordinate everything, you're trying to make sure that, you know, whatever piece of music that you guys have created is delivered, you know, properly, it's successful, everybody's playing their part, you know,
nobody's going off
key. So strategy you know, formulates like it makes up a big part of what the product manager is responsible for.
Okay. As someone that came into from writing software to managing a product now, how you say, like, rate it? Which one would you rather be? Would you rather manage the product?
One thing I've realized is that I've always been someone that I like doing a lot of different things. It's just like, it's just in my nature. I've always found it difficult to specialize in something.
Okay.
I'm mostly someone that likes to do this part of it, do this part, figure this out, do that, you know, curiosity and everything. So I would say that honestly, I prefer product management because it exposes me to a world of knowledge and things you get. So I mean, all the learning I had to do around even things like copywriting, UX design. So those things, I find them very interesting. Okay. Even marketing, data analytics. So these were things that as an engineer, I would not have known now. I've just been there, you know, writing my code and stuff like that. So
choosing whether to use Vue or React.
So I would say that, you know, a product just suits my kind of person. My kind of thing. And you know, with everything that I've been successful at, it was just like that. So from community work taught me a lot. It's basically you doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Program management, you're doing a lot of different things.
Being someone that actually like seen other people through those stages, how would you, like, what advice would you give someone that is like looking to go into product management and, you know, trying to get started? How to get like the best jobs and things like that.
So the thing is, and this might be a very unpopular opinion, but I've always seen product management as something that you transition into.
Okay.
I've always seen it. That's how I feel about it. And I usually advise people, it's going to be better for you to start with something that you can be a specialist at. So it could be product design, UX design, things like that. It could be data. It could be engineering, right? So I just feel like it's necessary. Most of the other things that, you know, have to do with product management are things you gain through experience.
Okay.
You know, reading books are important. You know, reading books about strategy, reading books about how to do your market already, reading books about how to do design sprints, reading books about, but it's when you start doing those things, when you've experienced it, you know, over and over again. Although I've seen people now that I think it's easier now maybe to get into it at a junior level because it's easier now because most teams now most likely have a senior PM that you can shadow and see, you know, some of the things that this person is doing, how they are doing it. Yeah. So they are going to be assigning tasks to you. You're going to be doing maybe operational tasks and stuff like that. While you watch how, you know, they do things around strategy, product discovery, and, you know, product success, you get. So I mean, my advice is that I think the first thing I tell everyone is, one, start out with something that is technical and hands-on. The second thing, be as curious as possible.
Yeah.
Know how to be curious, know how to find information, know how to ask questions, know how to do research. I mean, these are the things that will save you.
Yeah. Okay.
So how do you determine like a project is successful? Like you have a project now and you have so many different characters of people that you don't know that you're going to work with. How do you like determine how this project will be successful and what are the things that you do to ensure that village people will not
when the project is done, how do you say, okay, yeah, this is successful?
So I'll start with this. First things first, there's something called, I mean, it's just being able to measure success. So there are a lot of ways to measure, there are a lot of frameworks for it. So there are OKRs, their KPIs, you know, there are a lot of them, you know, to be able to measure your success. So the thing about measuring success with product management is that you define something called the North Star. The North Star is like, you know, it's like that. If you think of a North Star as, you know, when people back in the day, when we didn't have compasses and stuff, so there's a star that they're looking on
that they are following,
that it helps them to navigate and know where they're going and stuff like that. So your North Star is basically like your goal or that vision that you have for your company. So you're figuring out ways to ensure that you are going in the right direction. So that's what measuring success is like. So before you get started on the project or the product, or before you start building the product, or even when you're delivering it, you're going to say, when it has been built and you're, you know, delivering it to your users, you're going to say, how do we know that we are succeeding?
Yeah.
Now, these things are going to come from goals you've set, you know, during your strategy sessions and all of that. So if, for instance, we say, like, let me use an example of Google.
Mm.
So Google now, we're saying that we want to be able to deliver daily delivery of, do you maybe have 2,000 daily deliveries, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. I want to achieve it in the next 3 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to look for like other metrics. So for you to be able to, you're going to tell yourself, for us to be able to deliver or make 2,000 deliveries, we need to have 20,000 people sign up.
Yeah.
From all those 20,000 people signing up, we need to adopt maybe like 10,000 of them.
Okay.
That would be ordering 2,000 times daily. Yeah. Do you understand? So you're going to figure out what all the metrics you are looking out for. So these are the indicators that you're succeeding.
Okay.
So you now start monitoring all those data points and you're checking them. So if people are signing up, but they're not, you're not adopting them. What adoption means is that, you know, when someone gets onboarded to your platform, you say that they've adopted the product when they actually use it. Yeah. So there are a lot of metrics, there are daily active users, as you know, user retention, user engagement. There are a lot of, you know, metrics, acquisition metrics that, and retention metrics that you can use. So basically you're monitoring those things to see. And of course, these things are metrical, they are numbers. So you're saying, if we get up to this, we can say that, okay, we're actually, you know, meeting our target and stuff. And you see how all those things culminate into the actual North Star, which is your goal of 2,000 deliveries per day.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So, and then for your own question about, I believe that what you're talking about is majorly when it has to do with the actual software development, you know, the building of the software itself. One thing I've realized is that, you know, people underestimate collaboration.
Hmm.
And most of the time when we say collaboration, people think we mean meetings.
You know.
Well, it's not necessarily meetings. I mean, when I joined Localize last year, that was when I realized that collaboration is not really about meetings. You can spend like a million hours in meetings and you won't really achieve anything.
Come up with
meetings. But it's really finding or setting up ways for people to work together and creating enough transparency around your process. So, as a designer, is there a way that I can help an engineer do his job better? You are the engineer, you're saying that for the designer to help me do my job better, I need to inform them about this. So that's that transparency. There's transparency of information. I know what you need to do to be better at your job, so I provide it for you.
Yeah.
You know what I need to do to be better at my job, so you provide it for me and things like that. You notice that once people are on the same page about things, once people are aligned, because that time coming to meetings, we had alignment meetings. Like, yes, alignment meetings, like 30 minutes, 15, 30 minutes. This is what we need, this is what we need, this is what we need, this is what we need. Every other thing is asynchronous, right? So people are constantly working together. I mean, the first time I joined, I brought my normal style of meetings now from where I was coming from. So I wanted to, the engineering manager told me that this thing will not work, that we're paying hourly for these engineers, so they need time to do actual engineering, right?
Yeah.
So I now realize that, so you see me running from, every month you see me on Slack, do you have 5 minutes for a quick call,
five minutes.
And you know that when you're preparing for that, you're coming into a 5 minute call. It is exactly what you want to discuss. No time for, you know, no time for all of that. And what it does is that it makes you come prepared. So when you think about what you're going to discuss for those 5 or 10 minutes and you achieve as much as possible, the person gets back to their job, they have what they need, you get back to your own job, you already have what you need.
Yeah.
So creating that atmosphere of collaboration, transparency, and truth is definitely something that can, it will help you a lot in product delivery.
Have you experienced someone that is difficult to work with, but they cannot suck?
Yes, there are always people like that.
So how do you handle them?
So the thing is that I've realized that difficult people are not difficult because they just want to be difficult. I feel like there are a lot of reasons why they want to be difficult. And it usually depends on the situation. You just learn how to navigate it. But one thing I realized is that when you deal with a difficult person that has a lot of influence in the company, it's either you build an alliance with that person, figure out a way to build an alliance with that person, or you figure out a way to build enough influence to be able to let you do the things you want to do. If you cannot do one of these two things, they will frustrate you.
Frustrated. Wow. Sure.
So that's but I mean, they exist everywhere.
Yeah.
A difficult person that they can't sack.
I think today's session was very enlightening.
Yeah.
More questions for you?
Not really. I mean, we've talked a lot about a lot of things, and like for example, as a software engineer, you can have like things that you want to do and look forward to and stuff like that. So like, I don't really know what project managers look forward to besides telling people what to do.
when you say look forward to,
so like for example, as a software engineer, right? You know that okay, you're learning this. You want to be badass. You want to want to work with Netflix and build blah 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 blah. But now as a project manager, I know that like,
we have aspirations. You don't get it. Yes, we have aspirations like every other person. You know, I mean, just imagine that you're the product manager at at Money Point right now. Do you get these guys? We know when their company launched. They released 80 million in Series C. Imagine that you're at the heart of that. Do you understand? Those are things to look forward to. The thing is that our aspirations are usually more around impact. So most of the time, the products that you have managed, or the product you've been a product manager on, is, you know, you want it to be at that level where people look at it and you say, I built that.
It was
me. Did you get? So
But you guys, that software engineers, we have evidence.
It's difficult for you to find something tangible that, you know, a product manager does when it's on the team.
Yeah.
But the truth is that when you now look at a successful product, nobody's going to look at Bolt now or Uber and say, the engineers of this product are mad. Because the engineers are just there writing code, optimization, this and that. But there are a lot of things that are happening that, don't get me wrong, there's nobody that will say, the product manager of this thing is good. But somebody will say Bolt is a good product, and you know that you're responsible for that. Those are the kind of things that you're making. And then, of course, when you're hitting your metrics like this, you feel good about it too. Those ones, even when you look at your dashboard and you're seeing your revenue is going up, user acquisition is going up, retention, all engagement, you feel good. You wake up in the morning one day, you notice that like half of your, like, she was saying this afternoon that many people had stopped using. You understand? Those are the kind of things that worry you.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
But this one is just as a side note. There's, you know, there's that, because of this thing you said now, you know, there's that thing about engineers feeling like they are they're the people that make the world go round. Even as an engineer, I didn't like my fellow engineers. Very arrogant and pompous. You feel like the most brilliant guys in the room. And most of the time, I'm like, my brother, it's only code you write, come off it.
That's why I love engineers sometimes, if they just switch from engineering to building a product. I find it hard because sometimes you think it's all about building a good product,
or writing proper code and do stuff, yeah. doing
then
stuff
when
like
you
that.
You want to scale, and you have to manage people, and you have to manage yeah. expectations, you have
processes.
To manage processes, investors.
Yeah, you now realize that it's a whole different
yeah.
ballgame.
Yeah.
And then I even think that, you know, when it comes to things around, you know, product design and stuff like that, they're really the difficult parts of it. Like very, very as difficult as engineering.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah.
But the thing is that because, you know, the job of an engineer, you know, happens day in, day out, you can measure it directly
yeah.
in terms of my code is written this way, it's
yeah,
bringing
exactly.
out this API, it's connected to this
yeah.
one.
It's not failing.
Yeah, it's not
it's
failing. So people
breaking.
Are, but, you know, the things that the product designers do, or other members of the team, I believe that they are very, very significant, almost more significant than engineering, honestly, because when you will know how important UX is when you use a bad product.
No, yeah.
And I'm sure that all of us in Nigeria, at least if you encounter one government service that is online, you
yeah.
know.
First of all, they have to be online first.
Yes. So you know, but when you encounter those ones that they've put. Yeah, so when you've encountered those ones that are online,
yeah.
you know why you need a product
yeah,
designer
yeah.
because you know it's just chaos. It's
yeah.
a total catastrophe for most,
yeah.
most of them. And I've used a number of them. You don't want to.
I think they do it on purpose so they can do it again.
Yeah, correct. Add it to the budget.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
It's been amazing having you. Like,
yeah, yeah,
we
yeah,
had
but,
like an interesting conversation, and I think I learned a lot because
yeah.
there's so many things I didn't know about projects and products
yeah.
management that I didn't know, and I know it now, and I think our listeners have learned from it too. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
if you
yeah.
want to follow you on
yeah.
your socials.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, my handles on social media is the same across social media. It's I am Atanga.
This was me. That
sounds like something like Lion King.
No, it's a character from a movie. Did you know Mount Zion Films? Mount Zion Films.
Yeah.
My family,
all
those
Christian
films
yeah.
we watched as children. So there was this one. Ultimate Power. Yamatanga was this really
perfect,
powerful demon. It was this really powerful demon in the movie. Like, you know, he comes in front of a woman and shouts,
I think I remember.
And he'll disappear into a wardrobe and come out
what?
In the kingdom. Yeah, for real. So I was very fascinated by that.
By principalities.
Yes. And I like to think of myself as a principality.
Okay.
Not
oh,
an evil
God.
One.
Okay.
Okay, well, that still stands to be seen.
All right, guys. You guys should follow Ayamatanga
yeah.
on, you know,
social.
Twitter,
Instagram. Wherever, Snapchat, TikTok, everywhere. It's the same thing.
All right. And don't forget to follow After Scrum. Facebook. Well, Facebook, yeah? Twitter, Instagram. Yeah, follow us and like, subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can keep seeing interesting people that we have on our channel.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much and see you in next episode.
Bye.
Bye.